Popular music and technology have an uneasy relationship. Musicians love it when new technologies make them sound better, but they aren't quite sure what to make of the internet and its effect on their income. Over the next few weeks, NPR's Rick Carr will examine that relationship in his series Technopop, The Secret History of Technology and Popular Music. Today he has the story of an early technology that led to new kinds of popular music.
This was the home entertainment system of the 19th century. In tens of thousands of American homes, the hardware, if you will, consisted of a piano and usually a daughter. The software was a piece of sheet music. Around the turn of the 20th century, a new technology pushed the piano aside. The gramophone was the hardware and the phonograph record the software. The new technology redefined the sound and shape of American popular music. Consider something as basic as the length of a pop song. With the old technology, sheet music and a piano, there was basically no limit on how long a popular song could be. Richard Kaprowski is in charge of the Archive of Recorded Sound at Stanford University.
There were typically songs in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s that told stories, and they went on and on. Popular songs could be 5 minutes, 8 minutes long. My grandfather's clock is probably one that some people might remember, you know, about the clock that stopped when the old man died.
My grandfather's clock was too large for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, and it weighed not a penny's weight more.
Kaprowski says the new technology required songwriters to be a little more economical with their compositions because the software, the 78 RPM record, was limited in length to about 3 minutes.
Once 78 started and became a popular format, it meant that popular songs started to be written to last as long as a 78 record could be. Songwriters quickly saw, well, if I want to sell it as sheet music and in this new medium, which might get me some more money, I'm going to just write a shorter song.
The transition from printed music to phonograph records also changed the kinds of music to which Americans had access. One example of that change played out in the eastern Indiana town of Richmond, where a company that started out making pianos ended up making recording history. The popularity of the piano in the 19th century was very good for the Star Piano Company. At one point, its plant occupied the better part of the gorge that runs through the middle of Richmond. 75-year-old Sam Meyer started working in what locals called Star Valley in the early 1940s.
We're at the beginning of, well, we're about a block into it here, and it runs five more blocks south of here. There was a lot of buildings down here, and most of them were five- and six-story buildings, and they ran around the clock.
Today, there's almost nothing left. A brick smokestack, part of a manufacturing building, and a cash vault that just refuses to be dynamited. Competition from records hurt the piano business badly. Sam Meyer says the Jeanette family, which owns Star, responded by buying a record lathe, installing some presses for 78 RPM discs, and going into the record business.
Right here's where the recording studio was.
It's not much more than a bump in the flood wall that runs through the gorge, but Meyer says this spot attracts scores of musical pilgrims to Richmond, Indiana every year. New Orleans may be the birthplace of jazz, but the Jeanette Records Studio was the cradle of recorded jazz.
Bix, Louie, King Oliver, Jelly Roll Morton are a few of the people that came here, made their very first recordings here. Louie's first solo was made right there.
Bix Beiderbecke, Louis Armstrong, and the others Meyer mentions were joined by Earl Hines and dozens of other artists who helped define the sound of jazz. Those artists ended up in Richmond, a couple hundred miles southeast of Chicago, because even an artist as promising as Armstrong was just too risky for Victor and Columbia, the major labels of the day. Jeanette, on the other hand, would record anyone, as long as an artist could pay for the time in the studio and buy a handful of records to sell at gigs. Even, say, a jug-eared wannabe songwriter named Hoagland Carmichael of nearby Bloomington, Indiana.
Thank you.
Stardust, first recorded at Jeanette Studios in Richmond, went on to become an American classic. At the same time Jeanette was feeding the craze for jazz, it made recruitment records for the powerful Indiana Ku Klux Klan. The company also made a name for itself in the field of sound effects records. And helped popularize what was known back then as old-time or hillbilly music. The major labels of the day didn't like the competition one bit. In 1922, Victor and Columbia sued Jeanette and a handful of other independent labels for patent infringement. The Jeanette family fought back, and U.S. District Judge Learned Hand rejected the major labels' claim that they alone had the right to control who made records. Jim Griffin is president of the Los Angeles digital music consulting company Cherry Lane Digital. He says within a couple of years, songs from genres the majors had been more or less ignoring were turning into hits. Jazz, blues, country, ethnic music. Record sales took off. Griffin says there's a lesson to be learned from comparing the Jeanette story to the clash between today's music industry and the competition it fears from MP3s and file sharing on the internet.
It's not about faster, cheaper, neater, cooler. At the end of the day, the message does end up being that when we let go and we give up some amount of control, we almost always get back a great deal more than we gave up.
Griffin says the sad part of the story is that Jeanette Records never really built on its early success, although the firm did very well by pressing records for other labels. There's still a large CD pressing plant at the edge of Richmond, Indiana, a direct descendant of Jeanette.
Let's hear a little music.
Former Jeanette employee Sam Meyer is trying to keep the label's memory alive. As Jeanette was getting out of the recording business, Meyer was saving memorabilia and media from the scrap heap. At his home, about two blocks above the Star Valley, he has some of the original plates used to press records and a collection of test pressings.
See, we're lucky. The last century was recorded, and it was the first one to be like that. The same as the 1800s was one of the first times to be photographed. And before that, all we had was paintings and people talking about other people and what happened to their ancestors, and all we knew was what they told us. And here we have the actual person playing the song.
Meyer and the nonprofit Star Jeanette Foundation are releasing his collection on CDs. The foundation is also hoping to build a park and performing arts center in the gorge where Star Piano and Jeanette Records once stood. Meyer says he'd love it if pilgrims who came to the cradle of recorded jazz could arrive to find something more than ruins. Rick Carr, NPR News, Richmond, Indiana.